CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And Fire It Up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
Welcome back to CBS Sky Radio. Today on Fired Up with CJ, we have author Richard Moss, and his book is Inside Out Healing. You can find him at richardmoss.com. I'm Cassandra from CBS Sky Radio. We're going to go right back to CJ.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. So in the first segment, Cassandra, you were sharing how your mind is just, you know.
Yeah,
mine too,
like crazy.
Because it's the beginning of the school year. And all of us have those times where we are thinking about 1,000 things at one moment, and not necessarily in a present, deeply embodied way, but in a frenetic internet kind of way. And in the previous segment, Richard was saying 95% of his empirical study on people that he's talked to, 95% of the time it's relationship issues or people's relationship with themselves, relationship with others. It's about relationships. And so what I thought would be interesting is to take his model that he has in his book called Inside Out Healing, and it's called the Mandala of Being, the four places of mind where the mind goes when attention leaves the now. And so I looked at this model in his book, and it says when you're not in the now, you're basically either going into the future and planning out your future, my favorite. You're looking into your past and being nostalgic and thinking about the past, or your thoughts are thinking about you other people, like the people who are hurting me, irritating me, or causing me pain. Or you're thinking about you and how you're inadequate, shameful, guilty, or whatever. So I looked at this model where it basically is a simple model. You're either thinking about these four things, the future, the past, you or someone else, others, that are affecting you. And I tried to break this model, and I couldn't, because every one of my thoughts fell into these four categories. And I thought to myself, now why wasn't I able to come up with this model? You know, it's so simple. But in its simplicity, it was brilliant. So, Richard, tell us a little bit more about this model. I mean, how it is just so brilliant. It's so simple, it's brilliant. And how someone would use it, you know, the people that you've used this with your relationships, how do you use these four different places in helping someone get back to the now?
Okay. Well, in relationships, of course, we're telling ourselves stories about our partners, or we're telling ourselves stories about the relationship itself. Mm-hmm. We have beliefs about how the relationship should be, and those beliefs are not necessarily conscious, but they're there. And every time we end up in conflict with someone, we end up being in conflict because we're reacting to what they say to us, which comes from the stories they tell themselves that they're not conscious of, and those stories are judgments, maybe they're judgments of their partner. And maybe they're judgments of themselves. And as you said, maybe they're going back into the past and remembering how good the love was when we first fell in love. And why isn't it that way now? Or, because the question is never helpful until you ask the right question. We'll maybe talk about that another time. But when you say, why isn't it helpful? Why isn't it like that now? You're really saying, it isn't like that now. It's the righteous brothers. We've lost that loving feeling.
Mm-hmm.
This work says, there is only the present moment. There is only now. My work says that. The center of the mandala. Mandala is a word in Sanskrit that means circle. In the East, they are forms of art that represent the journey of consciousness. Usually they'll have a Buddha, some, you know, awakened or peaceful figure at the center. And then there's always four basic directions. And then there are more complicated mandalas. Nature is full of mandalas, like a sunflower or a daisy.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's strongly oriented toward the center and yet pulls you toward the periphery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what pulls us to the periphery of life are the judgments and beliefs about ourselves, like you mentioned, the
mm-hmm.
judgments and beliefs we hold about other people, about money, about God, about religions and other political persuasions, and anything else that's other. You know, the way a lumberer thinks about trees is very different
mm-hmm.
than the way a an environmentalist thinks about trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're constantly either going into the past, and by telling ourselves or inviting the same images from the past and interpreting them the same way right now, we create in the present moment the same emotional dynamic of the past, which could be guilt or regret or sorrow or anger. So we have a positive reminiscence that makes us look back at the past and wish it was as good now, or a negative reminiscence that makes us look back at the past. And in the present moment, can make us unhappy, scared, you know, just, and our fear would be that we'll repeat it. So we go into the future and we're afraid not to repeat the past, and we're hoping to have a better future. But the hoping is all built on something that has to happen as opposed to what is happening. So hope is a kind of lie that everybody wants and needs, and a lot of psychological, you know, effort is put into teaching people to be hopeful, whereas a person who's really in the present doesn't need hope at all. Not an iota of hope.
Well, because they're accepting what is. They're not trying to have everything be better or worse.
They are at one with what is, so they don't have to hope. And they're not going to be telling themselves a story about the future that's scaring the heck out of them. So in a relationship, what I will do with people is get both individuals to start looking. My work with couples is almost my most passionate place, and I would do that with my life partner, Annalisa. But nobody can do the work just in the couple. They have to do the work in themselves, too. And so that work is the same work everywhere. It's imagine you're in a Harry Potter world. Mm-hmm. You've got this mandala like a compass on you. The North Pole is future stories. The South Pole is past stories. The West Pole is stories about yourself. The East Pole is the east direction is all the stories and judgments about other people. Mm-hmm. And you put this little thing on a chain, and you wear it around your neck, your little Harry Potter mandala of being, Richard Moss mandala of being compass. And every time your thinking pulls you away from your body and the present moment, the center of the mandala, the now, and pulls you so far away that you lose connection with what we talked about earlier, the vividness of perception, the spaciousness of mind, being really in your body, very awake but relaxed. So the thinking pulls you away, and the Harry Potter compass goes, wake up, wake up. You're making a judgment of yourself, and it's creating depressive tendency in you. Oh, wake up, wake up. Now you're talking about yourself making judgments, and now it's making you superior and grandiose. Or, oh, now you're too far in the future, and you're scaring yourself silly about money. Come back, start now. Come back, start now. So the compass wakes you up. See, nobody can, I learned this long ago, you cannot teach a person how to be present. I work in deep retreats. I work in 9-day retreats, 10-day retreats, 4-day gatherings, occasionally short things like weekends. But the main effort is always to get a person to experience who they are in the present moment, in their bodies, without a thought, to feel that alive. And almost always what happens is there's forgiveness spontaneously happens, compassion spontaneously happens, love spontaneously happens. But they're constantly pulled back out to the periphery and get lost again and again in the me stories, the you stories, the past stories, the future stories. And they do that in their couple. They do that in their relationship. They do that with their children. You know what the biggest child story parents tell about their children? Almost every story a parent has, every judgment of the child, that they're not getting a job, or they're with the wrong crowd, or they don't do their homework, and they're not studying, it's all because the parent wants to feel safe. It's not about the child at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when an adult wakes up to their narcissistic, selfish desire for their child to succeed so they will feel safe, that's not love of your child. That's not attention to your child. That's not even knowing your child, and your child knows it. So they don't listen to you. Mm. They can't trust you because deep down in the energy of the relationship, they know you may love them, but they know that what you're telling them isn't about love of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's about making you, mommy, or you, daddy, safe.
Right.
All they have
it's
to do
about
is
the
conform.
Future. You're focusing about their future and going into all sorts of fear scenarios, and they kind of sense it on some level. And it's the opposite of that center place in that mandala. The center is the nowness, and when you are in that place, it is where you experience compassion and forgiveness and love of yourself, of your children, of other people. I think that that's probably why I think going into that center place is so important. It's because that's where all the good stuff is.
Well, that's where, as soon as a parent sees what those stories about their children are doing to them, and feels what they're doing to them in their own bodies and doing to the relational connection, the relational linkage with their own children, and they step back into the now and drop the story, suddenly they experience immediately a new relational linkage with their children and a much healthier state of mind and body in themselves. And when they go home having done that work, suddenly the kids feel it. And because the relational quality is what happens. When you're in the me, you, past, and future stories, you're actually not in relationship to yourself, so you're not in relationship to anyone else. So you're either in agreement or conflict, and mostly you're into socializing without anything of any true significance being shared, because if we start to get to something of true significance, we have to go through fear, which means we have to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And we don't yet know how to do that. Most people, their busyness, their talking, their work, their doing, their possessions are all ways of defending themselves against vulnerability. And vulnerability is the healthy relationship to fear.
Mm-hmm.
You don't follow fear. You're not obedient to fear, but you're vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't control the future. No one ever could.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to be safe.
Yeah. So you're saying it's holding the bigger space to contain the fear.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I hope people will read the book and listen, you know, and internalize that model the way you did, because I've watched it change lives, thousands and thousands of lives. Not only that, once you start down this path and you practice it for 10 years, your life is utterly changed. It's actually changed within 4 months or 2 months, but it's utterly, you're unrecognizable to yourself in a few years.
Mm.
I mean, you don't even know that a human being can be what you've turned into.
Okay, but that is the biggest promise ever. I can't wait to talk to me in 4 months and see what happens. Okay, so we have author of Inside Out, Richard Moss. We will be right back, and we're going to be talking more about the ego. We'll be right back.